Reaper were a rare sight here. Then again, what did they care where this experienced dwarf prospector was heading? The higher I climbed, the narrower the road grew. Once I reached the cliffs, it had turned into a barely visible trail. It must have once followed the bed of a mountain river that had, at some point in the past, changed its flow due to some geologic shift higher up. I was almost there. Finally, my sat-nav reported the end of the route. I could see it myself. I stood facing the dark mouth of a cave. Not a single terminal in sight, which meant there were no resources to mine here. I hadn't received any system messages announcing my arrival at an instance. Was it just a regular cave, maybe? I reopened the map. The location was correct. This was where I was supposed to find Master Grilby, who'd uncovered the power of stone and sampled the greatness of Isolurd, the heavenly steel. I took a deep breath and stepped into the cave's gloomy depths. Still no system messages. Very well, then. Let's continue. This looked like a regular cave indeed. I could stand upright, even though I had to squeeze my way through the narrow passage. The good news was Enon's eyes adapted to darkness easily. The rocky corridor was heading downward. I knew I couldn't feel it, but still, I did. I kept descending like that for several minutes. This elder liked his dwellings deep, didn't he? How on earth did he live here? If this was the only entrance to his halls, I didn't envy him. Imagine having to squeeze yourself through piles of rock day in, day out. Personally, I'd have found myself something more convenient. Ah! I glimpsed the dull flicker of a light. The tunnel was growing wider and lighter. Was it my imagination, or could I really hear someone groaning weakly? I hastened my step. That's right. Someone was groaning here. I darted forward. Soon, I found myself in a small, cozy cave. An enormous fireplace faced the entrance. No, not a fireplace. A forging furnace. I could see an anvil with its hammer, some pliers, and other tools. This was a smithy. And judging by a small bed in the corner, a low table and some shelves holding tiny pots and plates, the blacksmith lived here, too. But where was he? A weak groan came from the direction of the bed, indicating the location of the cave's owner. I'd failed to notice his frail little body amid the rags. I hurried over. An Enon. An old one. He was emaciated beyond belief. His eyes were closed. His parched lips kept mouthing something. The old boy seemed to have fever. The weak fire in the furnace was expiring. I shivered. The place seemed to be getting colder. The old man wore some filthy rags. He was shuddering. He needed to get warm. I pulled off my jacket and wrapped him in it. That's better. My energy levels had dropped, but that was irrelevant. I dragged the bed closer to the fire. The cave echoed with the screeching sound of its legs scoring against the rock floor. Now. The old boy seemed to be getting warmer, but the fire was dying. I looked around me. If I didn't find any firewood, I'd have to burn what meager furniture was there. Wait, what was that? I saw a small pile of something dark in the corner next to the furnace. Could it be coal, maybe? I walked over and focused on it. Name, Firestones. What, was that it? No stats, no effects? Apparently, I'd have to act by trial and error. I picked up a stone and flinched as a system message unfolded before my eyes. You've received a resource. Firestone. You've received +1 to your skill.
Excuse me?
I picked up another one. You've received a resource. Firestone. You've received +1 to your skill.
What was going on?
I picked up another one. You've received a resource. Firestone. You've received +1 to your skill. I dropped to my knees and began scooping up the stones into my knapsack. Only when it was packed to the brim did I force myself to stop. Actually, no. I still had one more slot left. My hands shook as I produced the feather and hung it around my neck. Now I had space for one more stone. You've received a resource. Firestone. You've received +1 to your skill. That was it. My knapsack was well and truly stuffed. My head spinning with excitement, I checked my stats. Current skill, 259 points. The maximum skill limit for your current profession level, 270. There were still about 20 stones left on the floor. I was panting as if I'd just run 100 meters. I still couldn't believe my luck. A weak groan reminded me why I was here and what I'd been going to do. I scrambled to my feet and walked over to the furnace. It was nearly out. Firestones, you say? Could they be what the old boy used for fuel? I had to try. I picked up a stone and threw it into the furnace. The orange flames reluctantly licked its dark little body. At first, I got the impression that it had only doused the fire further, but immediately the flames sprang back to life, coloring the black coal bright red. That's what it was, then. Excellent. I opened my knapsack and poured its entire contents into the furnace that roared, happy with the unexpected offering. The cave grew noticeably warmer. After a minute, you could barely breathe with the heat. I glanced at the old man. He stopped groaning. He didn't seem delusional anymore, either. The heat must have helped him, poor wretch. Good. Actually, what if I gave him a drop of my elixir? It couldn't hurt him, that's for sure. Holding the old man's head, I slowly poured the entire contents of the vial into his mouth. If this stuff helped me, it would surely do him some good. Poor man. He was all skin and bones. Of course, he was an NPC, but still, he was a sorry sight. Once he regained consciousness, I'd give him another elixir. I perched myself on the edge of the bed and adjusted his miserable excuse for a pillow, all the while trying not to look at the stones. What if the old man got angry with me for having thrown so many of them into the fire? What was I like? Pier rot and his tricks. Who would have thought? And I'd been a right piece of work, pigging out on the stones like a junkie on a fix.
Brogard, is that you, my boy?
A crackling old voice made me jump. I turned round. Two eyes, pale with age, stared at me.
No, sir, I said soothingly. I'm not Brogard.
Who are you?
The old man whispered.
Just a traveler, I said. I've come to see the legendary elder of my people.
And what you saw was a bag of old bones.
He ended my phrase for me, smiling weakly.
What is your name, traveler?
You can call me Olgerd, sir.
Sounds almost like Brogard.
He heaved a sigh.
Give me your hand.
I obeyed. The master's hand turned out unexpectedly strong, as if forged from steel.
I can feel the calluses of a mine digger,
he said. That's right. He chuckled.
I can also feel you wear something made by my apprentice. I'd sense this metal anywhere. Brogard was the only one who succeeded in combining silver and heavenly Isolurd.
I ripped the charm from my neck and offered it to the man. My heart missed a beat. He didn't take it, though. His fingers touched it lightly.
That's right,
he said.
This is it. The feather of Hagar the Night Hunter.
I glanced at the charm, hopeful. Name, the Feather of Hagar. Effect, unavailable. Restriction, only Ennin race. Level, 0. The effect? What was its effect? My virtual heart was about to jump out of my chest.
You don't happen to know more about this item, do you?
I mouthed, my lips dry. Master Grilby shrugged.
Brogard made it for Tobold the First, the King of Ennins. That's all I know.
I sighed, disappointed. Having said that, I shouldn't complain, really. The old man went on.
When I was young, I used to toil in the mine, too. It was a long time ago. We all start by getting to know the stone. Brogard, my best apprentice, used to go down the mines with a group of prospectors, studying the underground veins.
He shivered.
I seem to be a bit chilly. Could you add some firestones to the furnace? Let it burn nice and hot. I want to get warm before I leave.
Mechanically, I headed for the remaining stones and started collecting them. What did he mean, before I leave? Where did he want to go in his state? I placed the last stone into my bag. A new system message barely registered in my mind. You've received a resource. Firestone. You've received +1 to your skill. Congratulations. Your professional level has grown. You're a master digger now. That was it. I was a master digger now. I must have broken every profession leveling record in history. Had the admins been following my progress? What was going to happen to me now? Would they delete my account? Somehow I didn't think that Pierrot hadn't made a provision for that. If he'd allowed me to level up just like that, it probably wasn't as bad as it looked. This was crazy. I made master. In 10 minutes flat. Pensively, I scooped the remaining 9 firestones, which had brought me 1 point skill each.
Olgerd,
the old man called weakly.
Where are you?
I'm here, Master. I'm coming. I glanced at my stats. Current skill, 279 points. The maximum skill limit for your current profession level, 690. For some reason, Pierrot had only provided me with 170 of these cheat stones. You'd think he could have left a nice big pile here, enough for me to make expert level 2. So apparently he didn't want me to stick my neck out too much. Then again, how was I supposed not to, if my levels kept mushrooming out of all proportion? He probably knew more about me than I could ever guess. For all I knew, he might be keeping his tabs on me 24/7, both in the game and in real life. I poured the remaining stones into the fire and produced another vial. "Master, I have something here to make you feel better." He shook his head.
"Don't waste your precious elixirs on me. Nothing can help me now. I'll warm myself a bit by the fire, then I'll be on my way. Sit here next to me, please. I have something to tell you."
What was he talking about? He couldn't go anywhere in his state. Still, I obediently plonked myself down next to him.
"Every Ennin can evolve from an ordinary journeyman into a lord of elements. Not everyone can do it, but those who do go down in the history of our people. My eyes may be blind, but I can still see that you're hard-working, strong, and kind-hearted. I'm not going to ask you this question again. Are you ready to start on the hard road to true craftsmanship?"
My throat rasped.
I am, Master."
He laid his hand, heavy with fatigue, onto my shoulder.
"Very well, my boy. It's a shame I can't be with you on your path. You'll have to learn the ancient lore all on your own. But don't you worry. You can work hard, and that's the main thing. Promise me to remain strong and kind-hearted. Here, take this."
He reached under his tattered cloak and, as if by magic, produced 5 scrolls.
"These are the blueprints of my 5 greatest inventions. You'll only be able to grasp one of them. The remaining 4 are yet beyond your comprehension. But don't you despair. As long as you study the first one and practice building it, the other 4 will cease to be a mystery. I'm sorry. My time is up. I must return to the Lord of the Underworld. Remember, my boy, you must work hard. Then you can achieve your goal. Fare thee well."
He lay back on the pillow and closed his tired eyes. I didn't expect what happened next. The body of Master Grilby, the legendary elder, vanished into thin air. I was left alone in the cave. It took me some time to notice a new 3D message. "Congratulations. You've completed a hidden quest. Secret knowledge. You've received a second profession. Engineering designer. You've received an item. Blueprints of a replicator. You've received an item. Unavailable. You've received an item. Unavailable. You've received an item. Unavailable. You've received an item. Unavailable." Chapter 29. It was the 3rd day of my Melonville stay, and I was completely done in. First thing in the morning, I'd completed a quick quest run, seeing as Nicanor the lawyer didn't overwork me at all. We seemed to be developing a nice working relationship. If you can call it so, of course, considering my employer was an NPC. He was a grumbling old sort, you had to give him that. But at least he seemed to approve of my fervor. Every morning at 8 a.m. on the dot, I was in his office awaiting his orders. Last night, I'd even managed to complete my mining quota. Emeralds were definitely the way to go. I still had the 2-week contract with Lady Mel to work off, and then we'd see. One thing I definitely wasn't going to do was change my gear for that of an expert digger. Exposure was the last thing I needed at the moment. Besides, my old kit was good enough. Emeralds provided an excellent source of income. I needed stability, so I wasn't going to change anything anytime soon. Surprisingly, my skill levels kept growing. Not as fast as they would have had I switched to expert resources, but still. So now it was the evening of my third day. I'd completed my mining quota and come back to the inn earlier than expected. What I needed was a meal, a shower, and some well-deserved rest. I'd have to visit Elder Adker some other time. Tomorrow, or the day after, maybe. I already had my hands full with what I'd already received. So I was the proud owner of a second profession. I was an engineering designer. It sounded cool, but rather incomprehensible. What was I supposed to design? A spaceship? A tank? Or the latest generation state-of-the-art toilet bowl? When I'd finally studied the first scroll last night, I'd been rubbing my hands with glee, but today I wasn't as optimistic. Firstly, because I was supposed to use it to build some weird machine called a replicator. Secondly, because, apart from the fact that I had no idea what the hell it was supposed to do, putting the thing together might take a few days. The whole assembling procedure consisted of 5 stages, each of which was dedicated to creating one particular element of the design. In other words, the blueprint consisted of 5 smaller ones, which in turn contained lists of 10 ingredients each. The procedure was simple. By collecting all 10 ingredients, you could activate 1 element of the design. Easy peasy. So, that's what I was doing now, rummaging through the auctions for the resources I needed. You had to give Pierrot justice. He'd chosen the cheapest and most accessible of ingredients. Who could have told me that you could create a sensory spiral by mixing sticky yellow potion, rose tea, bone dust of a grogger, and other such junk? In total, all of the ingredients had cost me 80 gold. All I had to do now was activate one of the secondary designs, and I'd have the first part of the machine. The biggest problem was that activation was going to cost me thousands of points of energy. For that reason, the building of the machine was going to take several days. I opened the blueprint and chose design number 1. A system message helpfully informed me of the ingredients necessary. It was followed by an alert. Warning. Building a sensory spiral will deprive you of 1,000 points energy. Accept. Yes, no. With a sigh, I clutched a stamina elixir and prepared for the worst. No idea what could happen next. I might collapse in a heap for all I knew. In any case, an energy drain like that was going to affect me. That's for sure. I pressed yes. Congratulations. You've created an item. Sensory spiral. You've received +25 to your skill. Current skill, 25. Maximal skill points for your current profession level, 200. My vision faded. My head went round. It felt like being squashed by a gigantic press. I gulped the elixir and sat back. Some profession. You could pop your clogs just by leveling. A new message appeared. Cooldown alert. You can create the next part of the design in 7:59:59, 7:59:58. I struggled to scramble out of the soft chair. Jesus, this didn't feel good. Groaning like an old man, I hurried to change out of my kit into the pajamas. The bed welcomed me. I remembered how back in the spider grotto, the other guys kept dreaming about acquiring a second profession. According to them, that was a totally different ballgame. It turns you into someone of a much higher standing. Maybe. But personally, I didn't feel any different. Last night, I'd entered Replicator into the auction search and found nothing. Mirror World's market knew of no such product. So, this freshly minted engineering designer had better learn to be patient. As I was falling asleep, I thought that I might have been better off choosing some other profession. How about a master mitten knitter? I'd have spent my evenings churning out pair after pair of woolly gloves without a care in the world.
I knew it!
Weiner slammed his ham of a fist on the table.
That's typical. I told you that workers who show promise don't stay here long.
This was the sixth day of my extended immersion. We were all sitting in the Stickleback Inn. Weiner, Doral the Dwarf, and myself. The place was decent. The food was good. Most importantly, it was affordable. What makes you think I'm leaving? I asked him.
Doral, did you hear that?
The Rog bellowed, furious.
First he asks us all sorts of funny questions, and then he's upset when I put two and two together.
I only asked you whether my contract with Lady Mel was valid in all her territories. That's all I asked.
Doral, say something!
Weiner persisted.
Can't you see he's going? Mark my words, I won't be surprised if he's already packed his bags.
I could understand his predicament. He'd just reported that he'd successfully recruited a new worker with potential, and before you knew it, the said worker was already looking for greener pastures. He was right, to a point. My contract was expiring in a week. My trial period was almost over. The duration of my future contract partially depended on Weiner's recommendation. My idea was simple. Sign a contract with Lady Mel here in Verdai, but work somewhere else. I had plenty of reasons to do so. Firstly, it was about time I moved on to Class 3 resources, none of which were available here, unfortunately. Secondly, I shouldn't flash my new status around. Damn it. It looked like my operator had doomed me to never put down roots.
Give it a break, man.
Doral tried to pour oil over his indignation.
Sooner or later, it would have happened anyway.
Weiner waved his words away. Doral turned to me.
You have a plan already?
Did I have a plan? You could say so, I suppose. You see, I began tentatively, I was just curious. Let's presume I like my employer, but for some very serious reason I have to, leave my current position. Let's presume I have to move town.
And let's presume your current employer owns some mines in the town you're moving to.
A smiling Doral completed my phrase for me. I nodded. I can see you know what I mean. What I want to ask is whether my contract is only valid in one particular location.
It's not,
Weiner grumbled.
By signing a contract with Lady Mel, you can indeed work in any one of her mines.
Doral agreed.
Doesn't matter where.
She has lots of emerald fields,
Weiner said softly.
She even has a few diamond ones.
I tensed. I'd spent days poring over the map trying to locate a single diamond field, to no avail. You could buy diamonds at auction, but you couldn't find any diamond mines. How was this possible? And I couldn't even do a quick forum search. What a shame. Just when I needed the information the most. So, basically, it was ass about face as usual. Doral grinned.
She's a prudent old girl, is our Lady Mel. She must have laid her manicured hands on the juiciest locations already during the clan's turf wars.
You bet,
Weiner chuckled.
Now all she has to do is reap the dividends.
And so she should,
Doral said.
I dread to think how much those wars cost them.
Quite a bit,
Weiner agreed.
Not even counting the blackout spell,
Doral added.
You have any idea how much she paid the wizards for casting that?
Don't want to know,
Weiner replied.
I've got to save every penny to pay for my son's studies while they... Never mind. They're too spoiled, that's all. Is he them living on a wage?
Doral guffawed.
Depends what you mean by a wage. According to statistics, most people need $50,000 a year to be happy. Happy, not as in celebrate their luck. I mean happy, happy. A long-term satisfaction with their quality of life.
That's about $4,000 a month,
Weiner commented.
The question is, can money make you happy?
It might, I said pensively. It's sort of a two-way relationship.
Sure,
Doral said.
A well-fed European is happier than a starving African.
That's not what I'm talking about, I said. What I mean is this momentous shift in a family's life when tables turn. When people who used to be dirt poor finally reach financial stability. When they can at last get their hands on a decent car. When they can take the kids to the movies every Sunday, get nice new clothes for everyone, and stop freaking out about putting food on the table. I'm talking about basic human needs here.
Middle-class needs,
Doral added. Exactly. But then they enter the next stage. They get used to this particular level of income. It doesn't make them happy anymore.
What did I say? Spoiled, Weiner said. So it's not the fact of having the money, it's how much money you have.
I chuckled. So I don't think happiness has anything to do with the size of your paycheck. It's more to do with the work itself and the meaning it adds to your life. What I want to say is, as long as you keep working and making progress, as long as you try new things and fight obstacles, that's what makes you happy. Provided you move forward, there's hope for a better life for your loved ones. My happiness is in my family's health. We paused, pensive. Finally, I said, there's one thing I don't understand. If Class 3 resources are not disclosed, how is a humble master digger supposed to choose an employer? Why make them secret in the first place? The other two burst out laughing.
A humble master digger? Did you hear that? He's something. That just made my day.
Weiner slapped his clawed hand on the table, guffawing. The cups and plates clattered their protest. Doral offered a reserved smile.
Just imagine I called him a black scavenger the day we met.
A humble master digger,
Weiner repeated, still laughing.
You're something, you.
Sorry, Olgerd, no offense,
Doral said.
You need to understand us. The thing is, there are quite a few master diggers in Mirror World. But there's no such thing in Mirror World as a humble master digger. They're anything but.
Weiner had already calmed down.
All masters are the property of their clans. Strong clans. All such players live in closed settlements that belong to various rich, influential players.
Give it some time. 7 to 8 months, normally,
Doral added.
And if you keep working at this pace, you're bound to receive an offer.
Which you will find hard to refuse. I finished his phrase.
Yeah, sort of.
Weiner nodded.
This isn't a game, Olgerd. I'm very happy you realize it now.
Doral chuckled.
One might think you're talking of selling him into slavery. Yes, sure, all clans view their top-level workers as some sort of strategic resource. You can't deny it. Just don't forget that usually all such top-level workers are very comfortable with their agreement.
As comfortable as their powerful employers want them to be,
Weiner's voice rang with sarcasm.
What's lost is the illusion of freedom. You stop feeling as if you can take on the whole world.
That's exactly what it is, an illusion,
Doral exclaimed.
There is no freedom. That's fiction. A free man doesn't last long. He's either eliminated or shoved back into the pen. So his quality of living depends on the price tag he puts on his so-called freedom. We've been told all sorts of noble lies about lofty goals, but that's just wishful thinking. An illusion, if you wish. So my advice to you, Olgird, would be this. When the day comes, try and squeeze your future employer for every bit of money he or she can offer you. Otherwise, you might live to regret it.
He will,
Weiner added with a sarcastic grin.
They'll work him into the ground for every promise of a comfortable life he might get.
As I walked back to the inn, I kept pondering over the best course of action. I could try to contact the leader of the strongest clan in the entire mirror world and offer him my services, or I could try and sell myself to the highest bidder. This seemed like the most logical solution, but was it the best one? Dimitri and I had discussed it already. They would turn me into a pack horse, locking me up in some mine or other where I'd be free to bash at the rock and fill the great clan's vaults. Would such a clan profit from my offer? You bet. How about me? Unlikely, regardless of whatever terms I managed to negotiate for myself. That's provided I'd be allowed to negotiate at all. Who was I in their eyes, after all? I was exactly nothing. Someone without a face, nor clout or protection. Now, Andrew Pirat Petrov. He wasn't simple as everyone believed him to be, was he? Definitely not the nutty type, that's for sure. Why, oh why, had he started all this? He must have known how I'd feel once I opened the apps. I just refused to believe he'd done all this simply to piss off the game developers. And even so, how could I possibly hurt them? They don't even seem to notice me. They had their hands full with other things. What did Pirat gain from my selling myself into slavery? This scenario would have brought all his efforts back to zero. And Pirat sought profit first and foremost, didn't he? There. I'd figured him out. Only how was he going to pull it off? Difficult concept. The four NPCs he'd so helpfully planted in my way. This had to be the clue. Why not just say so? Was he wary of the logs? What was his plan? Judging by the maps he'd provided me with, I had only one place to go. No Man's Lands. Chapter 30. The morning of my seventh day met me with the already habitually sunny weather, the chirping of birds, and the buzz of an awakening city. My day off. However desperate I was to work daily, Dimitri had banned me from it. Otherwise, he'd said, there was no chance of me lasting the whole month. I'd have to log out before completing my contract. Only a moment ago, the system had showered me with 30 more reputation points. That made 680 points in total. A few more days, and I'd get access to the loans page, and then we'd see what the bank had to offer me. I had a few things on my agenda for the day. Last night, I had finally completed the fifth and last part of this replicator thing. So this evening I could finally put the beast together. I'd spend the morning doing my usual quest runs, after which I hoped to check out the woods of Lurcia. I made myself presentable and walked downstairs into the lounge. Oh, It was packed solid. I carefully threaded my way through the crowd into the inn's lounge. It was even worse. The variety of players was astounding. Knights in shining armor, wizards in their navy attire, archers, swordsmen, and quite a few high-level grinders. Commotion and happy guffawing filled the room. Serving girls in canary dresses fluttered amid the tables that groaned with food and liquor. Was that what they called breakfast here? I had a funny feeling I must have missed something. Ronald was beaming by the counter. No wonder, considering he was going to make a month's profit in one morning. Noticing me, he flashed me a smile.
"Sir Olgerd, what would you like, your usual?"
I smiled back. "Yes, please. And if you don't mind telling me, what's going on here?" He seemed sincerely surprised.
"You don't know?"
I shrugged. "Too much work." Ronald nodded his understanding as he handed two frothy beer mugs to a couple of bearded dwarves.
"Today the portal to the Barren Plateau finally opens."
I looked around me. "Do you want to say that all these people are heading there?" Ronald laughed heartily.
"In your dreams, these people had better keep out of there. The Barren Plateau is a location for real warriors."
A dwarf sitting next to me sniggered.
"You don't mean you've never heard of mass PVPs?"
I shook my head.
"I see,"
the dwarf said.
"You're one of those who are too busy to peek out of their minds and see what's going on in the world."
"Exactly," I chuckled. "I can see you're nearly finished with your beer. Mind if I call it my round?"
"No, I don't."
He happily slammed his hand on the table. A beer mug overflowing with golden liquid materialized in front of him. I focused on his name tag. The dwarf went by name of Smith.
"The portal to the Barren Plateau opens once every 6 months,"
he began explaining.
"This is the ancient battlefield of light and dark clans, the two strongest armies in Mirror World. This is some PvP, man, I tell you. Only top-level fighters. Players below level 200 don't need to bother. The stakes are too high."
"So it's sort of a show," I mumbled.
"Exactly,"
Smith agreed.
"We may not have football or the Olympics, but we do have our share of good shows. The Barren Plateau PvP is one of them. You see now why it's so busy? The live stream will start in 2 hours. You can watch it here in Melonville. The recording will be available in a few hours."
"Where can you watch it?" I asked.
"You can either watch it on the big screen in the city center, or you can download the Glass Houses app and watch it anywhere. Personally, I'm staying here. Ronald will switch on the screens in a minute. This time there's only 3 of our clans participating, as opposed to 4 dark ones. Last time it was the other way around."
"Why?"
"It's randomized. 10 clans had submitted applications, but the system only chose 3 of them. Still, the total number of players is the same on both sides, so technically it's fair."
"How many participants?"
500 from each side. If you haven't yet seen a mass PvP, man, you ain't seen nothing yet. Hollywood, eat your heart out. But our guys won't have it easy this time. The steel shirts are out. The Gold Guild and the Untouchables are both strong and experienced, but the Dead Clan has never been engaged in anything of this caliber before. And all the 4 Dark Clans are top ones, just to please. There's no way our guys can win."
"Don't speak too soon,"
a ginger-bearded dwarf next to him butted in. According to his tag, his name was Pete.
"I'm sure they'll put up a good fight. The Dead Clan has grown a lot. They've got lots of excellent warriors now."
Smith grunted.
I wish. Had the steel shirts been with them, they might have prolonged the agony. But they're not there.
The room hummed its approval. I looked around. The whole inn was listening in on our conversation. I wasn't surprised. Smith the dwarf had this soapbox kind of voice.
You want a bed?
The ginger-bearded Pete squeaked. Smith guffawed.
Right. You offered it, not me. What's your bet?
The room exploded in an uproar.
Me too! And me!
I'm betting!
Put me down too!
The noise was such you'd think you were in a Chinese market. Ronald didn't miss a trick either.
Gentlemen, please! As the landlord, let me remind you that my duty is to guarantee everything that carries on is within the law. For the paltry 1% of the winnings.
Okay, take our bets!
The crowd shouted. I suppressed a smile. Trust the admins to get their pound of flesh. Ronald stood up tall, arms akimbo.
So, what are we betting on?
A burly horrid answered for everyone.
Victory!
I bet 100 gold that our guys will make a quick job of the darkies,
the ginger-bearded Pete offered. The room hummed its disagreement. Someone called him a crazy. Another voice sneered, suggesting he gave the money to the poor instead.
I bet 100 that this time the darkies will give us a good drubbing,
Smith said firmly. The room cheered its agreement. Bets started pouring in. They offered me to join in, so I bet 20 gold on the lighties. I'd always done my best to avoid such situations, so this was the first bet in my entire life. I might have said no, but then I wasn't really losing anything. I bet on the lighties simply because they were our guys. The support the good guys mentality must have kicked in, too. Besides, the dead clan was in it as well, and my Ennin was almost one of them. Strangely enough, many of those present bet on the lighties too, so there wasn't much disparity. They brought me my breakfast, which I took to a far corner of the room. The 2 hours that followed were worth it. You should never underestimate the informational value of large gatherings. Mainly, such information was worth jack shit, but it was still worth digging through for an occasional glitter of gold. As an example, a snippet of conversation between two alves at a nearby table explained to me the mystery behind the player's eagerness to do reputation quests. They didn't say it expressly, of course, apparently for fear of disclosing the secret, but I got the general idea. Melonville's treasury. That was every player's wet dream. The more reputation points you had, the more items you could buy there. I didn't have access to it yet, but once I raised my reputation to 2,000, I fully intended to check it out. I'd also found out that, apparently, Dimitri had been mistaken about in-game blogs and forums. There were quite a few around, but you had to look for them. They also probably charged for access. Once I logged out, I might look into that too. The 2 hours had gone quickly. I was finishing my second cup of coffee when Ronald activated a wide screen hanging over the bar. For a split second, it felt as if I was back in the real world, sitting in some British pub about to watch a local game. The audience cheered. The setting up of the screen was accompanied by their cheeky banter about the fate of Ginger Pete's savings. The portal would open in 10 minutes. I was toying with the idea of going back upstairs to watch the battle in the quiet of my room, but reconsidered. I didn't want to strip myself of the pleasure of feeling the intense nature of the crowd's emotions.
It's starting!
Shut up, everybody! It's starting!
The portal's opening!
The room calmed down somewhat. A picture of the barren plateau filled the screen. I immediately thought of Dashti Kavir, the great salt desert in central Iran. It felt as if the game designers had borrowed some of its grandiose landscapes. Almost simultaneously, the dark and light players poured out of the portals. The room dissolved in cheers.
"They're all mixed up!"
someone shouted.
"Why did they do that?"
others voiced their disappointment. No one could understand anything. As far as I could make out, the forces of light had decided to march out as one army. The uniform ranks of heavy footmen paraded first, closely followed by swordsmen. The wizards and archers kept slightly behind. The Dark Clans, however, had chosen to march out separately, each under their own colors. They looked the same, actually. Humans, rogs, gnomes, and alves. The only difference was that they supported the so-called powers of the dark.
"The ladies are finished!"
Smith guffawed.
"They shouldn't have done it! The darks will make quick work of them!"
I glanced at Pete. He bit his lip in disappointment. His eyes betrayed his dismay. Personally, I couldn't understand what Smith was so happy about. Never mind. Let's see how it was all going to end. The battle began without warning. The Dark Ones charged. Almost immediately, it became clear that the Light Ones were going to deploy defensively. The first arrows and spells zapped through the air. Wow. I wouldn't want to be the one stuck in that mess, even though admittedly the show was top rate. The Darks split up. The Lords of Chaos and the Dark Legionnaires left their positions and moved out to the flanks. The Independent Clan and the Caste kept advancing toward the center of the Light ranks. The Dark strategy was rather clear. First, to knock their wizards and archers out of action, and then close in on the heavy footmen. A sigh of surprise ran across the inn. Instead of trying to stop the enemies flanking them, the Light Ones formed a square and ensconced all their wizards and archers in the middle. Had the terrain of the plateau been more restrictive, had it had some natural obstacles like hills, groves, or little rivers, the generals of light might have chosen a different tactic. But seeing as it was lifeless and flat as a pancake, such a step was, in my eyes, probably the best one. No one seemed to share my view. The audience raged, calling the light generals all sorts of unflattering names. If you listened to the room, one had to be an idiot to allow the enemy to surround you so stupidly. Couldn't they see that this breakthrough had cost both the Lords of Chaos and the Dark Legionnaires an incredible amount of energy? They'd performed their stunt while being showered with arrows and spells, while the main forces of light just stood there behind the safety of their magic shields. Finally, the Darks closed in. This signaled the start of the melee. The heavy footmen joined in the battle. The ranks of light quivered under the pressure from the Caste and the Independent Clan. It looked as if they were going to break any minute now. Some of the more faint-hearted supporters were already leaving the room, spitting in disgust and waving disappointed hands at the screen, as in, "There's nothing left to do here. We might just as well kiss our money goodbye." Those who'd bet on the Darks were rubbing their hands. I shrugged. Strange people. Couldn't they see that this breakthrough was the beginning of the Dark One's agony? Even I, a humble interpreter turned mind digger, could see that the Darks had had it. A few minutes later, the inevitable happened. The lights counterattacked. The swordsmen who'd been hovering behind the heavy footmen's backs now infiltrated the formations of the Caste and the Independent Clan. Dying, They made sure they took a few archers and especially wizards along. The giant, red-skinned narc assassins brandished their curved sabers in their forearms, eyes furious, froth dripping from their fangs. This kamikaze strike on the part of the light swordsman had stripped the enemy's heavy footmen of their magic backup. That was basically it. The colors of the independent clan turned gray, followed by those of the caste. I heaved a sigh of relief and eased back in my chair. Now the defeat of the Lords of Chaos and the Dark Legionnaires was only a question of time. My heart was pounding as if I too were in the thick of the fight. The top-level Dark players lasted the longest. They huddled together, clumsily trying to deflect the blows. But after some time, they fell too. Smith was a sorry sight. He stared at the screen in disbelief, watching the winners celebrate their triumph. The inn was in turmoil. Red-bearded Pete was dancing a jig on the table to the accompanying rattle of pots, mugs, and whatnot. Those who'd bet on the light side were beyond themselves with joy. Admittedly, as was I. My wallet was now 5,500 gold heavier. Many of the losers gave Smith the evil eye as they walked out. What were they like? What had Smith got to do with it? Yes, he was the loudest, but he hadn't forced anyone to bet on the darks. Human nature. Everyone wants to blame someone else for their own mistakes. Some of the losers sincerely cheered the Light One's victory, and a fine victory it was, too. Later, I found out that almost every member of the Dead Clan had fallen in that battle, allowing the others to finish off the dark survivors. I didn't feel like leaving the inn at all. Seeing my state, Ronald gave me an encouraging wink. He handed me a small wine flask, a nice, fat slice of piping hot bread, and a chunk of yellow cheese. In the meantime, the inn was just beginning to celebrate. Patrons dragged the tables together, while the serving girls clad them with large serving plates groaning with starters. Even out in the street, I could still hear their happy voices, the clattering of the plates, and the cheerful music. I heaved a sigh and headed for the administration center. Chapter 31. The freshly installed Woods of Lurcia free app kindly informed me that I was about to visit one of the game's largest locations that took up about 25% of Mirror World's total area. Had I not had a detailed route to Adker's dwelling all mapped out, it might have taken me a few months to have found my way out of the woods. Talking about which, Master Grilby's cave in the Gray Cliffs had disappeared from the trade routes map, which meant I only had 3 NPCs left to visit. 2 of them were located in No Man's Lands. I'd have loved to know what Pierrot had been thinking when he'd come up with this layout. I couldn't help thinking about old Grilby. Sure, he was an NPC, a bit of binary code, but still, it was weighing heavy on my heart. It had been too real. Trying to distract myself from unwanted thoughts, I began tinkering with my sat-nav settings. It didn't take me long to sync it. Next thing I knew, the machine offered me an optimal route plan. The woods turned out to be quite a busy place. I caught glimpses of other players among the trees. Herbalists toiled away in the numerous open spots, mainly Alvin women whose racial characteristics must have had bonuses for herbal medicine. I also saw plenty of hunters, mushroomers, and woodcutters. I even walked past a group of fellow mine diggers busy heading into the woods. In other words, the place was buzzing with life. My sat-nav guided me along the main trail, bypassing dangerous areas and the lairs of various monsters. Confronting them wasn't on my agenda today. True, my heart would miss a beat every time I noticed the giant beasts that looked like mutated wild boars. When an enormous black wolf crossed the trail not 20 paces away from me, I very nearly swung round and ran for dear life. Luckily, I noticed some herbalist girls farming herbs nearby. If they didn't show any fear, things couldn't have been that bad. I sighed and kept going. I was almost there anyway. In another 10 minutes, the trail brought me to a grove. It looked, admittedly, gloomy. I sort of didn't feel like entering it. The gaps between the tree trunks seeped darkness. So scary. But my sat-nav, as if on purpose, insistently invited me to enter it. I sighed and took a few tentative steps. The wall of trees devoured me like a starved monster, closing behind my back. I walked in the shade, casting wary glances around. Everything was quiet. The air was surprisingly fresh. It smelled of trees, of wood glue, of rotting leaves and forest blossoms. Gradually, the path narrowed to a deer trail. Every now and again, I noticed enormous clawed footprints on the ground. I just hoped Pierrot wasn't luring me in to feed me to some forest giant. After some time, I noticed a light behind the towering trees. Finally! I hurried on, leaving the last trees behind. The trail had taken me to a large opening overgrown with lush green grass. After the darkness of the grove, my eyes couldn't get used to the light. A large tree towered at its center. It would have taken several people to encircle its trunk. It gave the impression that the grove had stepped back in fear, awed by the giant. I took a better look. That was strange. Why hadn't I noticed it earlier? A small hut clung to the base of the tree. If you ask me what the dwelling of a forest spirit looked like, I'd tell you to come to this place and see for yourself. It had log walls overgrown with yellow moss and a tiny window. A dugout rather than a hut. Then I saw its owner. Correction, I heard him first.
Get down! Get down, I tell you, little troublemaker!
A forest spirit indeed. He looked like a big fat mushroom with a long gray beard, clad in a green robe. A wide-brimmed straw hat was perched on his head. The image was completed by lots of twigs, pine needles and bits of dried leaves littering his clothes and beard. He stood by the wall of his hut, trying to reach the roof with a long stick. Or rather, trying to reach something that was there. A little black animal was thrashing along the roof's edge, hissing and baring its fangs. It looked like a marten. A cat the size of a panther, red with darker spots, watched the scene with lazy indifference. It had lynx-like tufts of fur on the tips of its ears. The cat's tail kept swishing across the grass. I thought I knew whose footprints I'd just seen on the trail. I took a few more steps and stopped. I had to attract his attention somehow. All I could think of was give a little cough. Greetings, Master Adker. All of them, the marten included, turned toward me. Without moving, the enormous lynx focused its predatory yellow stare upon me. The old man hushed it down. His gloomy eyes sized me up.
Nice day to you, too. Where do you think you're coming from? And how come you know my name, dammit?
Faking surprise, I replied, Who the hell doesn't know of the four legendary elders of our people? He frowned.
What do you mean, your people? Are you sure, traveler, that you haven't hit your empty head on a tree on your way here? I suggest you go back from whence you came, sir, before I tell my animal to see you off. He likes having traveler's balls for breakfast.
Honestly, I was in shock. Pierrot must have overdone it this time. Never mind. I didn't care. I had no business starting flame wars with nutty NPCs. I was about to turn round and leave when I remembered. But of course, my appearance. Hadn't I updated my looks in Lighten's shop? Didn't I look like a dwarf now? No wonder Master Adker sounded so pissed off. He'd seen nothing yet. I made my stats public. What would he say now? His jaw dropped.
No! Damn it.
I'm sorry I didn't do it at once, I said. Enemies are everywhere. I have to keep a low profile.
Oh, yes, yes, absolutely, he hurried. Please, forgive the old man. I've grown completely out of touch here. Can't tell a decent ennin from a hole in the wall. This is crazy, damn it.
The little black marten squeaked his indignation, leaping around the roof like a hyperactive wind-up toy. The old man glared at him.
You make sure the roof stays in one piece, crazy critter.
You need help? I offered. He sighed.
I really don't know if you can do it. It's a black grison, you see. All the way from the Steely Mountains.
Oh, really? I played along. He answered very seriously.
He might be the last of its kind.
Why? He chuckled.
You're funny, you. You seem to know me, and yet you haven't heard of black grisons.
I'm sorry, Master Adker. I began to ad-lib. I grew up far from this part of the world, you see. I'm a Dursuorin spirit, but I know regrettably little about my own people. He startled when he heard the clan's name.
So your parents managed to rescue you? Did they raise you abroad? Is that how you escaped the terrible fate of all the others?
I nodded. I had to tread carefully here, or I might say something I might regret later.
I see.
He whispered, thoughtful.
What's your name?
I'm Olgerd. He chuckled.
How weird. Sounds almost like Brolgerd.
That's what Master Grilby said. The old man startled.
Do you know Master Grilby?
He whispered. I nodded. I do. He's my mentor. The old man grabbed my shoulders and shook me.
Where is he? How is he? When did you see him last? Come on, say something!
I waited until his torrent of questions subsided. Once the old man calmed down a bit, I said, The Lord of the Underworld summoned him. Master Adker slumped. He aged instantaneously, gaining a few more years before my very eyes. Tears glistened on his furrowed cheeks.
No,
he whispered.
What's going to happen to us now? Brolgerd is missing. Grilby's gone. Satus and Axe the Terrible must be dead, too. What will happen to our secret lore? But, wait. Didn't you say that...
He looked up at me.
You said Grilby was your mentor, didn't you?
I nodded. He passed on to me the designs of his most important inventions. He grabbed my shoulders again. Then he gave me a bear hug. I didn't expect that at all. When he stepped back, The expression in his eyes had changed. I thought I caught a glimpse of hope in his gaze.
"Well," he said with a smile, "let's see if you can tame this little prankster."
New quest alert. Black Devil. Reward unknown. Accept. Yes, no. Definitely yes. Master Adker stepped back with a strange smile on his face, leaving me to it. Okay, let's see. I walked over to the hut and focused on the little troublemaker. He was busy digging. Bits of straw and turf were flying everywhere. I glimpsed the interested stare of the large spotted cat focusing on me. The marten, or whatever it was, noticed my advance and paused. He tilted his sly little head to one side. His beady black eyes stared at me with curiosity. I immediately remembered something my next-door neighbor, Aunt Luba, used to say. A cat and a fridge are never too far apart. The creature on the roof admittedly looked nothing like a cat, but I wouldn't lose anything by trying, would I? Closely watched by three pairs of eyes, I slowly lowered my knapsack to the ground. I was pretty sure I had some cheese in it somewhere. I broke off a tiny piece and showed it to the beastie. He was already at the roof's edge, craning his neck, his tiny, moist nose busy detecting the new smell. I smiled. "Come on, kiddo. Get down." "Cheese. Yum." Without a moment's hesitation, the Grison covered the distance between us in a few long bounds. Wasn't he fast? His long, lithe body was beautiful. His black fur shimmered in the sun. Very slowly, so as not to alarm him, I lowered myself to one knee and offered him the bit of cheese in my outstretched hand. "Come on, take it. No need to be afraid." The Grison straightened his neck. His right leg hovered in the air. His ears stood up. In an almost imperceptible swoop, he snatched the cheese from my hand and leapt back to a safe distance. Then he sat there, savoring the treat. That was it. I had him. Just look at him, squinting with delight. Apparently he loved cheese now, and it wasn't for nothing I'd only given him a tiny bit. Now he'd be back asking for more. I was right. The Grison made quick work of my offering and looked back at me. By then I had a second bit of cheese ready. Only this time I placed it on my shoulder and stood up. What would he do now? The Grison tilted his cute head, thinking, then dashed toward me. Two powerful leaps later, he was sitting on my shoulder, holding the bit of cheese in his front paws. I could hear him purr next to my ear just like a cat. To capitalize on my success, I offered him a third piece, a bigger one this time. Then I turned and gave Master Adker a victorious look. He grinned.
"What are you like? Just don't tell me that cheese is all you've got." "These days they tell lots of bullshit about those times. Some people believe it, others don't. Believing is safer, I think."
Master Adker was already slightly the worse for wear. He'd had his fill of Ronald's wine. We'd been sitting in his hut for a couple of hours already, drinking wine and chasing it down with cheese, bread, and cured ham. The Black Grison had proved to be a glutton from hell. He'd already necked a quarter of the cheese and was now sleeping on the table, resting his cheeky little head on my arm.
"Most people now say,"
Master Adker kept reminiscing,
The Dursuer masters created a terrible weapon and didn't want to share their secret with other clans.
I nodded. That's exactly what I heard. He squinted at me.
You see, they portray our honest Ennin clan as a bunch of bloodthirsty animals, dammit. They claim we were greedy and merciless. They say we couldn't wait to conquer the rest of the world.
I shrugged. What could I say?
Not many people know,
he went on,
that when the King of Ennin's died childless, our clan leader Stromwold the Steel Axe was the next in line.
I nodded my understanding. Power games.
Exactly. They know no mercy. Also, the rumors of the mysterious weapon weren't exactly groundless. So, the clan council under the mountain sentenced us all to death. Each and every one of us. Women, children, and old folk.
He cast a sad glance at the sleeping Grison.
They even culled all of these.
I didn't understand. Why?
Unfortunately for these cute little animals, the Dursuer clan's coat of arms features a black Grison. The council decreed that nothing should ever remind that we ever existed, even if it took the annihilation of an entire animal race.
He smiled.
But, as you can see, they failed. You and I, we're still around. And so is this little fellow.
He paused, pensive, then looked up at me.
You know what? Take him with you. He won't leave me in peace anyway, damn it. Just look at him. He really likes you, doesn't he?
I snickered. He likes my cheese, that's what it is. He shook his head.
Don't say that. You don't understand. Once a Black Grison has chosen a master, it's for good.
As if in confirmation, the little brute stretched in his sleep and hugged my finger with his tiny paws. I looked at him closer. Christina would have liked him. Decisions, decisions. But what do you want me to do with him? I asked. Where do I keep him? If he's always so hyperactive, I won't last very long.
Hyperactive?
Master Adker reached into his pocket and pulled something out. I thought I noticed a faint bluish glow enveloping his clenched fingers. The Grison disappeared into thin air, just like that. I stared in disbelief at my arm where this little bandit had been fast asleep only a moment ago.
That's it.
Master Adker offered me a small, shiny, round object.
Take it, dammit! It's yours now.
Congratulations. You've just completed a quest. Black Devil. Reward, a Black Grison summoning charm. Chapter 32. We spent some quality time talking about the clan and its history, about life underground and the joys of mining. Master Adker literally buried me under a cartload of historical facts. True, it might be of little use for me personally. Ditto for the little charm I kept fumbling with. What was I going to do with my new pet? Tell me, Mr. Pierrot. Was it a new addition to my collection of useless junk like this replicator I was supposed to put together the same evening? Where exactly did the nutty programmer's offerings simplify my life? The shrewd operator and the master level, now that was different. I was eternally grateful to Pierrot for those. Problem was, I shouldn't stick my neck out. The second profession, the stuff of Flint's group's dreams, had proven to be a major waste of time and energy. And the feather. Wait, the feather. How could I have forgotten? My hands shaking, I reached into my knapsack and offered the silver feather to the already drowsy man. Sir Adker, do you know what this is? He peered short-sightedly at it.
Oh, yes.
He hiccuped.
This is the feather of the Night Hunter. A gift to King Torbold the First. If I'm not mistaken, it was Brolgerd who made it.
My virtual heart thumped twice as quickly. You don't happen to remember its properties, do you? He shrugged.
I'm sorry, my boy.
I suppressed a sigh of disappointment. Master Adker must have understood how I felt.
Mind if I ask you a question? Where did you get this from?
So I told him the whole story. When I'd finished, Adker paused, thinking, then began mumbling, half asleep.
The Misty Mountains, you said. Why not? You never know.
He must have come to a decision as he yawned again.
I think that's where you might find the answer.
New quest alert. Journey to the Misty Mountains. You must find the Nest of Rocks and inspect the remains of the last wearer of the royal charm. Then come back to Master Adker and tell him everything you've seen. Reward unknown. Accept. Yes, no. I double-checked the task and pressed yes. My sat-nav pinged, suggesting a new route. I opened the map. The red line of my future journey led toward no man's lands. That's where these misty mountains were located. Oh, talk about all roads leading to Rome. The sound of healthy snoring filled the room, distracting me from the map. Master Adker had already snuggled up in his chair, oblivious to the world. The clock showed 6 p.m. I'd way outstayed my welcome. Time to move it. Slowly, so as not to disturb the old man, I rose from the table. I really should have found something to cover him up with, as it was possible that he might not move from his chair all night. I looked around and noticed a comforter on his bed. Just what the doctor ordered. Gently, I covered the old man with it. The comforter was soft and smelled of herbs. Good. But, of course, he was only an NPC, and still, he'd done so much for me already. What could I give him in return? Then again, what did I have? Having said that, I might leave him 2 stamina elixirs. One of them seemed to have worked for Grilby. 2 vials left my belt and floated onto the table. Good. That's it. Time to get going. I made sure the door didn't slam as I closed it and walked out. The beautiful spotted cat still lounged by the entrance. Funny, but now it didn't look as dangerously predatory. 2 friendly yellow eyes followed my every move. See you around, kitty, I whispered happily and headed toward the grove. I was so deep in thought that later I couldn't remember how long it had taken me to get back. When I came round, I was already standing inside the portal center. So, this Pierrot sure knew how to get a man thinking. The portal jump was predictably easy, routinely so. Lots of things in this virtual world had already become part of my daily life. I wasn't yet sure whether this was a good or a bad thing. Nighttime Melonville buzzed, partying, as the capital celebrated the Barren Plateau victory. Many passers-by clutched colorful little flags with the winning clan's logos. Wherever you turned, you could hear upbeat music and cheering for the Generals of Light. The sky exploded with fireworks. The game designers were having a ball. I lingered, taking in the magnificent scene. The inn was the same as I'd left it, as if I'd only popped out for a couple of minutes. It was packed solid. I got the impression that there were more serving girls, too. The screens kept replaying the morning's victory from every possible angle. Apparently, some players had already uploaded their videos to the local net. Wow. I absolutely had to watch the whole thing again, but now I had work to do. My room was strangely quiet. The walls blanketed out any noise. Why couldn't they do that in real life? I'd been to Barcelona once on a business trip. I'd arrived late at night and had a meeting with a client early the next morning. I'd have given anything for a good night's sleep. Just my luck, that same night the local team defeated Real Madrid. Long story short, everyone arrived at the meeting red-eyed from lack of sleep. The city went on celebrating for another week. Peace and quiet was exactly what I needed now. A stamina elixir in hand, I made myself comfortable in the chair. Right. Last stage. Let's assemble this mysterious replicator thing. I opened the blueprints. Warning. In order to assemble replicator, you will need a sensory spiral, a steel stand, a support, a condenser, a crystalline panel. Warning. In order to assemble replicator, you need 1,500 points of pure energy. Would you like to assemble replicator? Yes, no. Oh, it wasn't going to be easy. Never mind. I pressed yes. Congratulations. You've assembled a replicator. You've received plus 75 to your skill. Current skill, 200. Congratulations. Your professional level has grown. You're a Class 1 engineering designer now. The maximum skill limit for your current profession level, 400. When I finally came back to my senses, I realized I was holding a smallish object that vaguely resembled a microscope. Oh, that energy drop had really crushed me. But if you think about it, it wasn't that bad after all. I fidgeted with the gizmo for a bit, then shoved it in my knapsack. What about the blueprints? Indeed, there was a new design available. Great. Let's get going. Congratulations. You've studied a design. Unworked Charm of Arok. To build an unworked Charm of Arok, you will need a fragment of blue ice. My sat-nav kicked back to life. Would you like to locate the source of blue ice? I had a funny feeling I already knew where that might be. Still, I clicked search. So, Sir Olgerd, let's take stock of what we'd done. On one hand, I hadn't deviated from the original plan. I'd say more, I was currently ahead of schedule. I'd had myself registered in Melonville, and in an NPC inn, no less. My reputation with Melonville kept growing. Soon I'd be able to apply to the bank for loan instructions, but that only after I signed a new longer-term work contract. This was my sole trump card. I had neither property nor guarantors left. On the other hand, Nutty Pierrot kept sending all sorts of weird items and quests my way. Even this replicator. I reached into my knapsack and produced the freshly assembled machine. What on earth could it be? It did indeed look a bit like a school microscope, but that was only from the outside. In reality, it was nothing alike. It had no buttons or little wheels, no lenses, nothing of the kind. Replicator. A replicator. Could its name be the clue? It could be anything, really. It could copy things, duplicate them. It could clone stuff. Another funny thing was, I hadn't yet received the activation message. Putting it plainly, I'd just assembled God knows what. Now, the second design. Blue ice, it said? I opened the auction. A quick search produced exactly nothing. According to this search, there was no such resource in Mirror World, period. Okay, let's see what my sat-nav had found. Of course, just what I thought it would be. There was only one place where you could farm blue ice, the so-called North Mine. Had it not been for the map of Dursuer Clan's trade routes, courtesy of Pierrot, my bot would never have found it on its own. I made a mental note to check all the forums for any No Man's Land's maps as soon as I logged out. I should have done it earlier. No wonder. Before, I'd only been interested in mining locations, but things seemed to be taking a very interesting turn. Now the location itself. That was the most interesting thing about it. The North Mine was located in the neutral zone. It was the farthest-flung, godforsaken shithole at the furthermost periphery of Mirror World, to be precise. No idea how I was supposed to get there. Most likely, even the creme de la creme of Mirror World players weren't interested in going there. So, it looked like I hit a brick wall in this particular direction. Oh. Bummer. What could I say? I'd have to keep on mining, wouldn't I? All that time wasted on assembling a stupid machine. Never mind. What was it Master Grilby had said? Do not despair. Okay. So I won't. Now the feather. What had the other master said? The Misty Mountains. I checked the map. That looked more doable. Sort of. The location was just next door to No Man's Lands. Wait. This was a stone's throw from the Maragar Citadel, the one that Terminal Number 572 had so insistently invited me to. Yes, that's right. Look, here's the Raldian Ridge, the Black Stream, and to their right, the Misty Mountains. I sat back, deep in thought. What was the probability of me, a humble mine digger, finding the said nest of rocks without getting into trouble? If the truth were known, trouble was my middle name. On the other hand, I only had one characteristic of the feather left to open. Three I knew already, without spending a penny, mind you. If by some miracle I discovered its effect, it just might bring me closer to my objective. You never know. All I could do now was hope for the best. And talking about the Ennin's elders, I had two more of them to visit— Satus and Axe the Terrible. According to Pierrot's prompt, all these NPCs were experts in their professions. Grilby was more or less clear. He was an engineering designer who'd given me his passion for his life work. Now if I only knew what his life work had been about. Master Adker was a forest spirit. What did the description say? He was the patron of the younger race. He too was more or less clear. He lived in the forest and seemed to be happy with his lot. It looked like he was the lord of the animal realm, or something along those lines. Pirat, my tireless well-wisher, had placed these two in the lands of light. Apparently, he'd wanted me to start my search here. Unlike Grilby's, Adker's name hadn't disappeared from the map, which meant we had to meet again. Next, Master Axe the Terrible, the valorous monster slayer who wore his underpants on the outside. He might try to benight me. If he did, he'd be disappointed. I was a mine digger, and no mistake. Here in Mirror World, a grinder was supposed to stick to his trade. Axe the Terrible resided in a location known as Sleepy Valley, not far from the Twilight Citadel, which I'd have loved to visit. Still, at the moment, it was out of my league. The fourth elder, Master Satis, he seemed to control some kind of force or element. Also, apparently, he was a very smart guy. A warlock, if I'd understood correctly. His ice tower was located to the north of No Man's Lands. That entire region was colored white on the map. Incidentally, that's where my blue ice was located, too. That seemed to be it. I heaved a sigh and produced the round, silvery charm Adker had given me. A curled-up marten had been minted on it. The charm's reverse side featured what I believe to be the coat of arms of the Dursuer clan, a triangular shield being at its center, supported by two black grisons. Unlike my little bandit, they looked strong and threatening. Dangerous. I couldn't work out the motto. The language looked like nothing I'd ever encountered. I had a funny feeling there was no dictionary in the world that could translate this. Now, what else? Name, the Black Grison Summoning Charm. Effect, allows you to summon your pet. Restriction, only Ennin race. And how was I supposed to summon you? Hadn't Master Adker clutched the charm in his hand? I copied his actions exactly as I remembered them. Yes. Would you like to summon your pet? Yes, no. Aha. Yes. Before I could blink, the lithe black body materialized out of thin air and dumped itself onto the bed. Was it my imagination, or did I glimpse a slightly bewildered expression on its face? Still, the first shock hadn't lasted. 3 minutes later, the Grison had already inspected the whole of my room. I had the impression he'd sniffed every corner at least twice. That's right, buddy, I chuckled. I'm afraid we'll be stuck here for a while. While he'd been prancing around the room, his stats chart had appeared in my mental view. So, this little fellow was actually a char in his own right. Main characteristics. Name, blank. Race, Black Grison. Type, relic. Level, 0. Satiety, 50 out of 50. Experience, 0 out of 50. Now that was interesting. Relic, you say? I wondered if common grinders like myself were even allowed to have a pet. I couldn't quite wrap my head around all these latest developments. Let's check his settings. Abilities, none. Available from level 1. Experience received, 10% of the owner's combat experience without detracting from it. Nourishment. The owner can feed his pet at any given time by sharing some of his energy with it. Warning. A pet's level can't exceed that of its owner. I scratched the back of my head. This looked like a catch-22 situation. You, my little critter, are doomed to remain an ordinary animal. Seeing as my type of account wasn't entitled to receive combat XP, my pet's level wasn't going to grow anytime soon. So, basically, he was a nuisance and a liability. even though if the truth were known, I was happy to have the company, even the company of such a restless and ill-mannered little brute. So should we give you a name, then? Judging by what Adker had said, this little monster was a male. Oh. Actually, I did have an idea. We used to have a tomcat, just as black and as big a lover of cheese, too. When still a kitten, he used to raise a hell of a lot of mischief. Over time, he'd sort of grown out of it. He'd lived in our country house. All the neighborhood dogs knew better than to mess with him. To be fair, he'd never provoked anyone. He was a very laid-back animal. But still, his early life escapades had earned him the name of Prankster. Later, no one could understand what had ever possessed us to give such a name to this calm and civilized cat. That's irony for you. Oh, it felt like another life. Had it really been me then? The university? The slim engagement ring I'd presented Sveta with? Her emotional yes? Our modest wedding, followed by years of traveling the world? Her sweet, round little belly, followed by the birth of Christina? I sighed and closed my eyes. As if sensing the state I was in, the Grison jumped onto my lap, his moist nose nudging the palm of my hand. "So, buddy," I whispered, "mind being Prankster for a while?" "Why not? At least it suits you, for the moment." The Grison lifted his head and pricked up his ears. Two beady black eyes watched me intently. That sorted, then. I entered the name, Prankster. The system zoned out, then presented me with the acceptance message. I smiled. Christina would have been on top of the world now. I'm sure you'd have liked her, too. Actually, you must be hungry. I opened his interface. There. The satiation characteristic. When I'd summoned him, it had been at 50 points. I checked the clock. It had been almost 50 minutes ago, and Prankster was already 10 points down. That sounded like a lot for a tiny critter like himself. But, considering the fact that he'd never stopped bouncing around since, it was probably normal. What was 10 points for me, with my strength and stamina readings? Peanuts. Right, let's try and feed you, then. I searched for the nutrition tab. Got it. Would you like to feed your pet? Energy required, 10 points. Accept. Yes, no. I chose yes. His energy bar began growing until it filled to its limits. Had I read gratitude in his beady black eyes? Couldn't be. Must have been my imagination. The system addressed me again. Congratulations. Your pet is well fed. Warning. Make sure you feed your pet regularly. You might simplify the feeding process by synchronizing it. Would you like to synchronize the feeding process? Yes, no. What was that now? Synchronization? What about it? Actually, simplify the feeding process sounded rather reassuring. Very well, then. I pressed yes. Once again, the system zoned out, then reported, "Synchronization successful. Congratulations. From now on, the feeding process will proceed in automatic mode. Check your interface for changes." I followed its advice and opened my profile. Found it. There was a smaller energy bar just under mine, with Prankster's tiny, cheeky face next to it. I see. So every time he got hungry, the system would feed him out of my resources. Admittedly, for me, it was a drop in the ocean. It also saved me quite a bit of time. which was becoming more of an issue with every passing day. Chapter 33. The morning promised no surprises. A cold shower, a breakfast downstairs in the inn, doing my daily quest runs. The epitome of Groundhog Day. Just like actor Bill Murray, I was stuck in a time loop. Still, I shouldn't grumble. I kept advancing toward my goal, slowly but surely, as with every passing day my knowledge of Melonville kept growing. Of course, it had been the bot that controlled my char most of the time, but I had disabled it on occasions too. And this morning, I'd forgotten to activate it at all. Admittedly, I was beginning to understand why they needed all these reputation quests. They introduced a player to Mirror World, allowing him or her to take the plunge into this weird and wondrous world that followed its own rules. Over the last 8 days, I'd already built up a certain circle of NPC acquaintances. For the most part, they used me as an errand boy, and even that only within one particular block. The program might soon move me to a different area of the city. No idea whether this was good or bad. I seemed to be getting used to it. Besides, I also seemed to have a good relationship with local NPCs. No more surprise quests, though, which was a shame. By 11 a.m., I was already freed up. You could say I was lucky. The lawyer had called in sick. I just hoped I'd still get the credit, so I'd reported to his office just in case. A failed quest was the last thing I needed. Now, in principle, I could head for the mines. But before doing so, I felt like treating myself to a coffee. There was a nice, cozy tavern on the corner of Theater Street I sort of frequented whenever I could. It wasn't that their coffee was the best, but it was definitely the cheapest. I entered the already familiar tavern as usual and headed for the bar. There, you could always find a pile of newspapers and magazines reporting on the NPC's life and news. You might think that this was just a bunch of virtual scrap paper, but for long-term players who found themselves stuck in Melonville, it was a veritable treasure trove of information. Most reputation quests relied on players reading them. A couple of days ago, my lawyer had issued me a task I'd have had no chance of completing had I not checked one particular article in the local rag. He'd sent me to deliver some paperwork to some old baron or whoever. When I'd arrived at the address, they wouldn't even let me in. So I went back to my lawyer and explained the situation. He didn't want to know. According to him, I had to deliver the papers, and that was that. And if they didn't want to talk to me, they'd better give a good reason. So I went back and was shown the door again. By then it had been 2 hours of me running to and fro. I was quite tired, so I decided to have a quick coffee in this very tavern. And what did I see but this newspaper on the bar? Apparently the old baron had kicked the bucket, and his brats were busy sharing out his money. That's why they hadn't let anyone in. Armed with this intel, I hurried back to my lawyer, who was more than pleased with the news and dismissed me for the rest of the day. So you see, these days I tried to pop in and check the papers whenever I could. Just in case, you know. I was about to place my order when I heard someone in the room call my name. A woman's voice. I'd heard it before. I turned round. Of course, this was Mila, Tommy's mom. Remember Tommy, my innkeeper's nephew? She stood by the staircase, smiling wearily, all pale and red-eyed, either with tears or from lack of sleep.
Hi, Olgerd.
Her voice was tired, lifeless even. Morning, Mila, I said. Great to see you. I've just popped in for a coffee. Would you like to join me? She shook her head.
Thank you, Olgerd. That's very nice of you, but I'm in a bit of a hurry. Tommy's sick. He's at home now. Ronald's wife is looking after him, and I still have to rush to the other end of town to see the pharmacist. There's an herbal doctor who lives above the inn, but he doesn't seem to have the medication I need.
Is it serious? I asked. Her eyes filled with tears.
My boy gets worse by the hour. The medication is very, very rare.
Can I help you? Tell me what it's called. I'll go look for it and you go back to Tommy. Hope glistened in her stare.
You might be right. I can use all help I can get, that's for sure. The medication I need is Milfoyer tea.
New quest alert. Searching for a rare medication. You must locate a serving of Milfoyer tea and bring it to Mila. Reward, unknown. Accept. Yes, no. I clicked yes and assured Mila I'd do everything possible. Having double-checked her own address, I hurried in search of the nearest pharmacy. If my sat-nav was to be believed, I was already within a 10-minute walk from it when I froze in my tracks and slapped my forehead. "What am I doing?" I mumbled. "What's the pharmacy got to do with it?" I opened the auction tab. Ha! There it was. Milfoyer tea wasn't at all rare, nor expensive. 2 gold. I clicked buy. My inbox flashed with the confirmation message. That was it. Off I went to save the kid. Rare medication. Yeah, right. It took me about 15 minutes to get to Mila's. She looked genuinely surprised when she answered the door. I'd done it in no time, as I'd promised. Once I handed her the medication, the system showered me with 100 reputation. Excellent. Wish it happened more often. Mila didn't want to let me go just like that. She asked me to wait for her in the lounge. While she was busy giving the medication to Tommy, I studied their family pictures on the wall. So strange. These glasshouse NPCs really had lives of their own. Just like in the real world. The funny thing was, I was already getting used to it. One of the pictures showed Mila and Tommy accompanied by a military officer in a crisp uniform. Broad shoulders. Tall, but not burly. He looked more like a gymnast. All sinew and muscle. Serious face. A stern but strangely happy smile. Sharp cheekbones, a firm chin. A scar ran across his right eyebrow and cheekbone. His eyes weren't damaged. An enemy sword must have missed them by a hair's breadth. I took a closer look. Tommy bore a definite resemblance to the man.
"That's Tommy's dad,"
Mila's voice said behind me. I turned around and smiled to her. Like father, like son. Where is he now? She sighed.
He's serving on the border.
I see. How's my young friend?
The fever's almost gone.
She nodded gratefully.
He's fast asleep now.
Excellent, I said. Let him sleep. He needs to recuperate. I've got to be off, actually. I need to get to work.
Thank you so much, Olgert. I've no idea what I'd have done without you.
That's nothing. I'm happy if I can be of help. I bade a warm goodbye to 2 other women, Ronald's cousin and his wife, who too came out to thank me for my help, then walked out onto the street. For today, my Groundhog Day was over. Something new had just happened. Why hadn't I thought of befriending the innkeeper's family? Was it real-life inhibitions kicking in? Had I been wary of intruding or being in the way? And now the game had blatantly pointed me in the right direction. I had to meet Mila's husband, too. You never know. All this might result in surprise quests happening more often. I'd barely taken a few paces when a new system message popped up before my eyes. Judging by the way everybody flinched, I wasn't the only one who'd received it. Denizens of our glorious capital, yesterday's victory over the forces of evil fills our hearts with joy. To honor this undoubtedly outstanding event, the administration of Melonville have decided to offer every city dweller a free gift to remember this day. Congratulations! You've received +300 to your reputation with Melonville. Congratulations! You have 7 days to acquire any item from the city treasury depending on your reputation ranking. Hurry to claim your 15% discount. Attention all those who opted for repeatable reputation quests. Melonville administration considers this category of players worthy of a special offer. For the next 24 hours, the reward for accepting such quests doubles. All players who are still considering this type of quest, now is the time to accept it. I reread the 3D message, then looked around me. Other players all seemed to be scurrying off somewhere, grinning happily. Wow. I opened my stats. I had 1,160 reputation points. Yes! I could go to the bank! I flew off to the Reflex Bank building. Hope gave me wings. I looked for a free terminal and opened the loans page. Greetings, Olgerd. Would you like to apply for a loan? Yes? No? I pressed yes. Available services by Reflex Bank. Express loan. Maximum 3,000 gold for up to 10 months. Medium-term loan. Maximum 20,000 gold for up to 6 years. Long-term loan. Amount, negotiable. Term, negotiable. I held my breath and selected long-term loan. The system replied straight away, "We're sorry to inform you that you can't view the long-term loans page of the Reflex Bank site. Viewing it requires 5,000 Melonview reputation points." All my attempts to view the other types of loans failed, too. I left the bank with a heavy heart. Where was I supposed to get 5,000 reputation in 1 month? This was a terrible blow. And that was simply to view the page. What would they ask me to do next? And my tribulations might only start there. Had everything been in vain? This stupid registration, these ridiculous quests, all that errand running I'd done. Calm down, I told myself. Keep your hair on. I still had the contract, which, once extended, offered me the chance of getting a loan in a real-life bank. Now, of all times, I was quite ready to face the Steel Shirt's leader in order to be shoved back into the pen, as Doral had so eloquently said. This wretched, disgusting, frustrated feeling. How I hated it! Could I ever do something on my own? I closed my eyes. Think, man, think! There was some very important detail in there somewhere that kept eluding me. Some tiny little fact, very butterfly-like. The harder you tried to catch it, the easier it fluttered away from you. But the moment you stopped thinking about it, it would alight onto your shoulder, soft and gentle. Wait! I found it. I swung around and dashed for the administrative building. Today it was especially packed. No wonder. Everyone was in a hurry to cash in on repeatable quests. Lots of sour faces around. Apparently, their missions proved too much for them. I finally grasped the thought that had kept eluding me. I remembered my system message and the city administration's promise to increase rewards for completing repeatable quests. Go to the Maragar Citadel. Objective: Seek out Captain Gard and offer him your services defending the Maragar Pass from the powers of the dark. Become a Citadel Guard. Duration, 90 days. Reward, plus 2,500 to a guard's reputation with Melonville every 30 days, and an additional plus 2,500 bonus in commemoration of our victory over the forces of the dark. Warning. In order to complete the quest, you will have to temporarily lodge in the Maragar Citadel Barracks. Those players already registered in Melonville retain their right to receive their daily 30 points bonus to reputation. Warning. The quest must be completed in full. The failure to do so will result in losing all points already earned. Warning. In order to receive a new quest, a player must complete the previous one. I accepted the quest. Didn't they say that all roads led to Rome? In my case, all roads seemed to be leading to no man's lands. This concludes Project Daily Grind by Alexei Usadchuk. Translated by Irene Woodhead and Neil P. Mayhew. Narrated by Kyle McCarley. Copyright 2016 by Alexei Usadchuk. English translation copyright 2016 by Irene Woodhead and Neil P. Mayhew. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Magic Dome Books and was produced in the year 2016 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks and to take advantage of special offers.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.